Okay, so now let's start. We're holding on Pei Aleph Amud Beis, a little bit past the middle of the Amud by the two dots, Ochal Oichlin. And the line begins Kielu. We said in the Mishnah, Ochal Oichlin She'en Ru'im La'achila, if a person ate or drank on Yom Kippur things that are not normally edible, then we said he's potter because the Isser is only to eat and drink things that are, put that word, Yasuvi Daite, as we've been saying throughout the Perek, things that would calm him down and take the edge off his hunger, and these kinds of things are not. So the Gemara gives an example. Omar Rava, Kos Pilpuli Diyem Dikikori, if a person ate peppercorns, the little fruits from which black pepper and white pepper and whatever are made. So if a person eats those on Yom Kippur, Kos means Rashi explains earlier, kosis means to eat something not in the normal way. It's not normal to eat peppercorns. Therefore, Rava says he's potter because that's not the derech of eating it. Usually you eat pepper as a spice in food, not by itself. Similarly, he says kos zangvila b'yemi d'kipuri. If a person eats ginger on Yom Kippur, also potter. So let's analyze that. The Gemara says, I have a contradiction about the peppercorns, first of all. A Bryce says, Rav Meir used to say, let's look at the dinim of Orla. Mimashma shenem of araltum or losa is period. Since the Torah says that the fruit of a tree is Orla for the first 3 years, so obviously the fact that it has fruit means that it's a fruit tree, and since the pasuk continues shut for 3 years, lo ye ochel, it shall not be eaten, and obviously we're talking about something edible. So what does the Torah have to add the words a fruit tree, a tree with something edible on it? Obviously, we have to be talking about that kind of tree. If it doesn't have something edible, there's nothing to be subject to Orla. So that's it means the word eitz machol, we darshin from it, eitz tam eitzayu piryas shoveh. It comes to include the kind of tree where the taste of the wood and the taste of the fruit is the same. Now, what is that? Now, of course, one answer could be that it's an esrog, but there's no chiddush in it. Of course, an esrog is chayiv and orla. Why would we think otherwise? But rather, heavy om is a pilpulin. Therefore, you have to say that this refers to peppercorns, which there, the wood of the tree also has a peppery taste to it. L'lam d'choshal pilpulin chayiv and orla. This teaches you that peppers, that peppercorns are chayiv in orla. Because even though the plant they grow on is actually a kind of low vine or low bush or something, nevertheless in halacha it's considered a tree. And you should also realize from that that Eino Tzisro Chaser Klum. Now, since at least on a Daraisa level, Orla applies only in Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara mentions elsewhere that's a halacha l'moshe v'sinai that applies in Chutz La'aretz, but the full thing of it applies only in Eretz Yisrael. So you can learn from that. And besides that, since the pasuk phrases it, v'chi savoyu ala oretz, when you come to the land of Eretz Yisrael and you plant any kind of Eitz Machol, you can learn from that. V'ein Eretz Yisrael chaser klum. You can learn from that that Eretz Yisrael is not lacking anything, even though peppers they usually only grow in tropical climates, but you should know there's at least one place in Eretz Yisrael that's suitable for growing them. Shenema loisechsa korobah. The pasuk says nothing is lacking in it in Eretz Yisrael. Even tropical things like that, you can find places, you can find microclimates in Eretz Yisrael where it'll grow. Anyway, the point is that we see that now, since we're calling it Eitz Machol, obviously that means peppercorns are edible by themselves. So what are you telling me, Rava, that if a person eats them on Yom Kippur, he's potter? The answer is like kasha, hover the tivta v'havia beshta. Depends whether we're talking about fresh ones or dry ones. Fresh ones are in fact edible. Those are the kind that the pasuk is referring to and that Rav Meir is referring to in his braisa, that orla would apply to them because of that. And if a person were to eat fresh ones on Yom Kippur, that is considered derech achilose and michayev. On the other hand, when Rava says he's potter, it's talking about dried ones. Okay. What about now as far as the ginger? You're telling me that again that if a person eats ginger on Yom Kippur, he's potter. But didn't Rav Nachman say, "Hi himalta"? This himalta, which is Rashi describes it as a concoction where they take ground up spices, in this case ground up ginger, and mix it with honey. They would use it in those times as a medical treatment. In other words, the idea is you might have, for medical purposes, a person might have to eat a certain amount of ginger, but they can't eat it by themselves, so therefore they mix it with honey. I mean, you could eat it by itself, but it would be, as we're gonna, that's the whole point of the question, is you could eat it by itself. But to make it go down easier, they would mix it with honey, and then the person would eat it that way. So, sort of Nachman says that this Himalta, the Osimi Be Hindavoi, which comes from the land of the Hindavoi, Rashi translates Hindavoi as Me'eretz Kush, which would, on the face of it, be Ethiopia. On the other hand, the word Hindavoi sounds a lot like India and like Hindus and other such words, and it seems that that is where it came from. That is actually where pepper is native to India, and no, not really native, but whatever, it was grown, it's grown mainly in that part of the world, and therefore it would mean that it's coming from India over land, or maybe by sea, whatever, to Bavo, which is fairly close, rather than Ethiopia to Bavo, would be way out of the way. In any case, it's possible also. I mean, there's a north of in the north of India, in what's nowadays Afghanistan, there's a Pakistan, whatever. There's a range of mountains over there that are called the Hindu Kush. So it could be when Rashi says Me'eretz Kush over here, he may be referring to that area. You have the Gemara in Megillah, for example, when it says about Achashverosh that he ruled from Hodu to Kush. The Gemara has two opinions over there, whether Hodu and Kush are at opposite ends of the world or whether Hodu and Kush are right next to each other. So that may also factor in over here. Anyway, the point is that Rav Nachman is saying that you have this Himalta, this blend of ground up ginger and honey that comes from the land of the Hindavoi, from Ethiopia or India, as the case may be, whatever. Sharia, that stuff you're allowed to eat. You don't have to worry that you don't have to worry about bishul akum, because it's necho kamos shehu chai. You could eat it raw, and we have a general rule that anything that you can eat raw is not subject to the dinim of bishul akum. You also don't have to worry about geulei nochrim, that there may be they cooked it in a non-kosher pot, because Rashi says because it would be a nosin tam lefgam. There's no reason to assume that the pot that they cooked this in was used within the last 24 hours for things that are osir, and therefore it's nosin tam lefgam, and therefore it's mutter. Another possibility that talks about in Avodah Zarah and in some other places is maybe to begin with the goyim don't use a pot for this purpose in which they cook something treif, because the taste of it will get into this himalta, into this spice and honey mixture, and ruin it. They want to have a clean taste to it, therefore they're not going to use a pot that was used for cooking treifus. Anyway, the point is, so he says, so you're allowed to eat it, there's no problem of bishul akum in it, because you could eat it raw. And we say bur pri hadoma on it because the ground up spices is the main component, not the honey. The point being that we're saying that you can eat it as it is. So what are you telling us, Rava, that if a person eats ginger on Yom Kippur, he's potter? And again, the same answer as before. Like Kasha, Habir Tivta, Vahabi Abeshta, same answer. We're told there's a difference between fresh ginger and dry ginger. Fresh ginger you could eat by itself. That's the kind which is placed in the Himalta. And that's the kind, therefore, that we're saying that it could be eaten as is, and therefore a person eats it on Yom Kippur, of course, it'd be chayev like anything else. The kind that Rava is talking about is dried ginger that you can't eat by itself, therefore if a person eats it by itself on Yom Kippur, he's potter. Which actually the Machzor Shekel says based on that, then that would mean the flip side of it is if the Himalta is made with dried ginger and they grind it up and mix the spices in and then mix the honey in, then on the face of it, then it would be also if it comes from Goyish lands, if it was sold by Goyim, because again, you're back to the same problem. It's not edible raw, and therefore Bishul Akum would apply. Okay. So that's the din. So when it comes to these spices, if a person eats them when they're dry on Yom Kippur, he's potter, but if he eats them fresh, then he's chayav. Next, Tanan Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, Ocho Alei Kanim, if a person eats on Yom Kippur the leaves of bamboo shoots or other such plants like that, so the leaves themselves are not really edible, potter. So then again, he's potter because he ate something that's not normally eaten On the other hand, lulav gefanim. But if he eats the new growths from grapevines, where you have at the end of the tree, at the end of the branches, rather, you have little new growths, little new buds that form that eventually are going to develop into another part of the vine. So then he's chayev. So he's chayev for eating those because those are something that are edible. So what's the definition? Up to what point are they edible? And beyond that, they start hardening and they're considered like a wood. If they blossom between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, So now when it comes Yom Kippur, they're less than 10 days old. So now they're still soft and now they're edible. But if they blossom before Rosh Hashanah, so now come Yom Kippur, they're more than 10 days old, then Rabbi Yitzchak Magdala is telling us now at this point, they're too toughened up to be considered food. And if a person ate them on Yom Kippur, he'd be potter. On the other hand, Rav Kahana, I'm a kol shloshim yom, Rav Kahana says that it would have to be that for to be potter, for eating them on Yom Kippur, it would have to be that they're more than 30 days old. So the Gemara says, Tanya kavaseh de Rav Yitzchak Magdala, ochol alei kanim potter, if a person eats bamboo leaves or other leaves from reeds like that, then he's potter. The lulav gefanim chayev, on the other hand, if he eats the shoots of the new shoots of grapevines, then he's chayev. Elohim lulav gefanim, and the definition of those lulav gefanim is kol shel livlav u'mer hashanah v'ad yom kippurim, if they blossomed, if they started forming any time between Hashanah and Yom Kippur. So not like Rav Kahana that they're considered edible until 30 days old, but rather like Rabbi Yitzchak Magdala, that they're only edible until 10 days old. Okay. We said in the Mishnah Shosat Tzir Emurias Potter that if a person drank on Yom Kippur Tzir Emurias, which we said are various kinds of fish juices, then he's Potter. So those things are usually used as dips. So unlike, for example, let's say the Alei Kanim that we just mentioned, which are never eaten, here you have Tzir and Muyas are eaten. A person does eat them, but not by themselves. They use them as a condiment or a dip. So then he's Potter if he drinks them by himself, because that's not the normal way of drinking. So the Gemara says, Hochoy Metzchayev. So the implication, since the Mishnah didn't mention vinegar, it mentioned only Tzir and Muryas. So the implication is if a person drinks vinegar on Yom Kippur, he'd be Chayev. So Masnissin Mani, well then who is our Mishnah like? The answer is Rebbe. The Tanya, Rebbe Omer, Choy Metzmeshev Es HaNefesh. Rebbe says that vinegar restores the soul. Therefore, if a person drinks vinegar in the amount of Kimloy Lugmov, of course, then there's no Ta'anuas Nafshasechem. He's not feeling the affliction of Yom Kippur because he drank something refreshing. So the Gemara says, Dorash Rav Gido Bar Menashe. So Rav Gido Bar Menashe. Rav Gido Bar Menashe Darshin Mibiri de Neresh. Rav Gido Bar Menashe from Biri of Neresh, which is the name of a place, one time Darshin in public. Ein halacha kerebi. The halacha is not like Rebbe. Vinegar is not something that restores a person's strength and soul, and therefore a person would be potter from drinking an Yom Kippur. Lashana, the next year, when it came Yom Kippur, everybody decided to get smart. Nafki kola alma, everybody who heard his drasha went. Mozgu, they mixed vinegar with water to make it more drinkable. Vashasu and mozgu, vashasu chala, they mixed and they drank mix of vinegar and water the following Yom Kippur. Shomer of Gido v'ikvad, of Gido heard what they had done, and he was machben on it. He was angry about it. Omar, he says, even if they took what I said and completely misinterpreted. Emer de Omar ana diyeved. For one thing, I only said that diyeved. If a person does it, then he's potter. Lachatchila mi amri. I never said that lachatchila you're allowed to drink such a concoction on Yom Kippur. Also, emer de amri ana purta. And also, even what I was talking about was maybe only a little bit. Tuva mi amri. Did I say that even a lot of it a person would be potter? And furthermore, I only said if a person drinks vinegar by itself, mozug miyamri, did I say anything about when it's diluted and then it's more drinkable? Now the halacha is in fact that there are some rishonim who paskin based on the second one in our Gemara over here, the purta tuva miyamar, that indeed there'd be a difference between whether a person drinks a little bit of vinegar versus a lot, where if he drinks a lot, then he could be chayev. Other Rishonim, including the Rambam, and this is how it's passing in Shulchan Aruch, say that no, vinegar, provided that it's strong enough, now there are different degrees of strength of vinegar. In halacha, usually the way we tell whether vinegar is strong enough is when you pour it on the ground, does it bubble? Anyway, if the vinegar is that strong, then the accepted halacha is that if a person drinks it on Yom Kippur, whether a little or a lot, then he is in fact potter. Not that you're allowed to do it, but he is potter from kores or achatas. On the other hand, if he dilutes it with water to make it drinkable, then yes, he's going to be chayev just like any other drink. Okay. Mishnah says, Hatinoikis ein ma'anin oisin b'yom kippurim. Children, we don't make them fast on Yom Kippur. We're not chayev to keep them from eating. Now, even though we learned the other day that there's a mitzvah of loy sa'achilum, you're not allowed to feed a child something that's aser, but because they're children, but because not eating and drinking is going to be harmful to them. Therefore, you don't. Therefore, you're allowed even to give them. Well, Rashi just says you don't have to prevent them from eating, which maybe is, would be mashma that it means that you don't give it to them yourself. You just let them eat it by themselves. But even if that's the case, it definitely means that you don't have to stop them. In fact, some of the poskim say, and this is how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, you're not, if they want to fast any time at an earlier age, before the ages that we're going to talk about in the Gemara over here, you don't even allow them to because it could be harmful to their health. But we do train them a year or two in advance. Now the Gemara is going to explain, and Rashi brings it over here, is you have them fast a certain number of hours. Before a year and before 2 years. Now, what do we mean by a year and 2 years? So Rashi explains like this. Usually children develop shtei sairus at the expected age, 12 for a girl, 13 for a boy. So now the year before that is called that point is called the perek, the time when their bodies change. So now you have now a year or two so as follows. For example, for a boy, when he turns 13, then he's already bar mitzvah. The year before that is called smucha lepirkei, and then the year before that is the year before the year that's smucha lepirkei. So in other words, it would come out that you start training them in fasting for a certain number of hours 3 years before his bar mitzvah. Now we're going to see in the Gemara several different opinions about that. And for a girl, everything would be a year earlier because girls mature faster than boys do. B'shvil she'yiru gilim mitzvahs, you do that in order that the children should be accustomed to doing mitzvahs. You have a mitzvah of chinuch, so therefore this is part of that mitzvah of chinuch, is you're training them in the mitzvah. You're training them in the mitzvah of fasting. So the Gemara asks, why do we have to say lifnei shana v'lifnei shnasayim before a year or 2 years? If it says you have to train them 2 years before, how much more so a year before? Just say shnasayim. So the Gemara is going to give several explanations. Amar of Chista, like Kasha, habachoyle habibari. It depends whether we're talking about a sick child or a healthy child. If it's a sickly child, then you only start training them 1 year ahead. And if it's a healthy one, then 2 years. So now let's teach out how much that's going to be. Now we have there's a few different girsos in the next few lines of the Gemara. So we'll talk according to Rashi's girsa, and then we'll talk a little bit about the Rif's girsa, which is what's actually brought lahalacha. Well, actually, both of them end up being brought lahalacha. So we'll talk about that. So Amar Rav Huna. So Rav Huna says here is the definition: Ben Ches uVen Tes Mechanchen Oisa L'Shoyes. Now, even though, according to Rashi's explanation, even though Rav Huna is using the word, the girsa that we have in front of us, which is according to Rashi, even though it uses the word ben ches, so ben tes, we're going to explain that Rav Huna is actually talking about a girl. So a girl of 8 or 9 years old, mechanchen oisa l'shoyes, you start training her by hours. Again, meaning, in other words, that, for example, as the Gemara is going to say later, if the child usually eats, let's say, at 2 hours into the day, at 8 o'clock in the morning, then instead you have them eat their breakfast an hour later at 9 o'clock. That's l'shoyes. And then as they get older and older, then you train them in more and more of it. So when she's 8 or 9, then she has l'shoyes. Then yudav, then yudalef, mashlim in midrabanan. Then when she's 10 or 11 years old, then midrabanan, she has to complete the entire fast. Then yudbeis, mashlim in midaraisa. And once she reaches 12, then she has to on a daraisa level. Now technically, of course, it's only 12 plus shtei sairus. In general, we say, it says in Shulchan Aruch that if she reaches 12 or a boy reaches 13, we usually assume for most purposes in halacha that they may have developed hairs and then they fell out. So even if we don't actually see any hair, well, first of all, yes, it's true. We have Chazaka de Rava, which tells us that usually a boy of that age or a girl of that age, we usually assume they develop hairs, and we're allowed to assume that for most purposes in halacha. It's why, for example, a boy by his bar mitzvah usually leads davening by the night of his bar mitzvah, and we don't actually have to check whether he has shtei sairus because we use Chazaka de Rava. Here we're saying something else. Even if the child themselves checks and finds they don't have sairus, nevertheless, there's still the concern that they had and they fell out. So therefore they still have to fast. Anyway, so that so all of that is betinoikis. All of that is talking about a girl. So 2 years of chinuch for hours and 2 years of chinuch of completing the fast midrabanan. So what it is essentially he's saying that since he learns the Mishnah to be saying mechanchen oisam lifnei shana v'lifnei shnasayim means for a healthy child. So when we say over here 8 and 9 and 10 and 11, that's talking about for a healthy child. For a sick child, it would all be moved up one more year. So ben ches, so a healthy girl who's 8, or ben tes, a sickly girl who's 9, and the same thing, a healthy girl who's 10, or a sickly girl who's 11. Then once she reaches 12, then she's chayav d'oraisa. So in other words, he's saying that since the Mishnah says mechanchen oisam lifnei shana v'lifnei shnasayim, what it is, in other words, he's going to say, as the Gemara is going to say later, that you have two different levels of chinuch, one of shois and one of a full fast, and each of them lasts the same amount of time. Okay, that's Rav Huna. But Rav Nachman, Amar, Rav Nachman says, now according to the Girsa we have in front of us, which is Rashi's Girsa, and Rashi stresses that Rav Nachman is not going to argue with Rav Huna, he's just going to give the numbers for a boy instead. Rav Huna gave them for a girl, Rav Nachman is going to give them for a boy. Then Tes ben Yud Mechanchen Oysen L'Shoiz, a boy of 9 if he's healthy, or 10 if he's sickly, then you start training him for Shoiz. To delay his breakfast, let's say. Ben Yud Aleph, Ben Yud Bey is Mashlimin Midrabanan. When he's 11 if he's healthy, 12 if he's sick, then you start Mashlimin Midrabanan. They have to fast the whole fast Midrabanan. Ben Yud Gimel Mashlimin Midaraisa. And once he's 13, then he starts fasting Daraisa. Vitinoik, and that's talking about a boy. The Rabbi Yochanan, now Rabbi Yochanan disagrees with Rav Huna and Rav Nachman. So he says, Hashlama d'rabbanan leka. The whole concept that a child below bar bas mitzvah should have to complete the fast midrabbanan, Rabbi Yochanan says there's no such thing. Therefore, according to him, you start only at Ben Yud Aleph, Mechanchen Oysa L'Shoiz. Therefore, he says, when the child is 10 or 11, then you start training him as far as hours. And only Ben Yud Beis, when the girl reaches 12, then Mashlimin Midaraisa, then she has to complete the fast Daraisa. There's no time when a boy or a girl has to complete the fast on a Drabonon level. So unlike Rav Huna and Rav Chista, who say that there's two different stages of chinuch, he says there's only the one stage. So the Gemara says, Tanan, let's look at our Mishnah and see which one it follows better. The Mishnah says, Atinoikis ein ma'anan oisim b'yem ha-kippurim. We don't have the children fast on Yom Kippur. Ava machanchan oisim lifnei shana v'lifnei shnasayim v'lifnei shtayim. We have them start practicing a year or two ahead of time. So in other words, again, lifnei shnasayim could mean as much as 3 years before the bar bas mitzvah. So the shleimer of Huna and Rav Nachman. So I can understand according to Rav Huna and according to Rav Nachman, they say that there's two stages of chinuch. So they explain. In other words, they would say that the Mishnah is talking about a sick child. So therefore, what it is you have 2 hours of shoyz before 1 year of finishing midrabanan. So it comes out altogether they have 3 years of chinuch in fasting. So therefore, lifnei shana v'lifnei shnasayim means lifnei shana l'divrehen v'lifnei shtayim l'divrehen. It means that it means a year before they have to start fasting d'rabbanan, or 2 years before they have to start fasting d'rabbanan, as the case may be. Again, there's a few different gersois over here. Hagoyz Habach changes it, and Rashi also has the gersa this way: lifnei shana l'divrehen v'lifnei shtayim l'divrei Torah. So a year before they have to fast Daraisa, and 2 years before they have to fast Drabanan. Hagoyz Hagroa keeps the Girsa as we have it over here. And it says that it means up until a year before the Chayiv Daraisa, then you have to be mechanech them for hours, and then during that last year, they have to be mashlim midivrehem. And that would be for a sick child, and then for a healthy child, then it would be 2 years. They have 2 years where they have to fast the Rabbanon, and 2 years before that where they have to fast a partial fast the Rabbanon. So according to Rav Huna and Rav Nachman, we can understand the wording of our Mishnah. El Rav Yechanan Kasha, but how is Rav Yechanan going to understand it? He says that there's only the 1 or 2 years when you have fasting a partial fast the Rabbanon. So according to him, why is the Mishnah using the expression lifnei shana v'lifnei shnasayim, which implies a year or two before something else? What's the something else? There's only according to him a year or two before the chayiv daraisa. That's the answer. Means a year or two before their perek, before their age of maturity. So according to him, all you do is you go back to 10 or 11, you don't go any further back than that. Toshma, let's try to bring another proof. A braisa says that children, you don't have them fast and in kippur. You machanech them a year or two before their perek. So according to Rabbi Yechanan, we understand, because that's exactly according to him. You never start before a year or two before their bar bas mitzvah. What about according to Rav Huna and Rav Nachman, where they say that the training begins 3 or 4 years before their bar bas mitzvah? Oh, so that's the answer. Amri lach rabbanan, my chinuch nami dekatoni ashlama. You're right. When we say mechan chin oisan in the braisa, it doesn't mean. Now the difference is the Mishnah just said lifnei shana v'lifnei shasnayim. We could say it means a year or two before the chinuch de rabbanan. But the braisa is clearly saying shana shnasayim samoch lepirkan. So they're going to say what it means is the chinuch of the braisa is different than the chinuch of the Mishnah. The chinuch in the Mishnah is talking about chinuch of shoyz. The chinuch in the braisa is talking about the chinuch of fast and the complete fast derabanan. So the Gemara asks, so me kori v'chinuch hashlama. Since when do we call finishing the whole fast chinuch? That's more than chinuch on the face of it. Bahatanya, don't we learn in a braisa? Eza chinuch. What does it mean? Chinuch as far as the fast. Hoya rogel lechol b'shtei shoris ma'achilanois l'cholish. If the child usually eats breakfast 2 hours into the day, so let's say 8 o'clock in the morning, then on Yom Kippur we have him eat at 3 hours at 9 o'clock. B'sholish ma'achilanois b'arba. And then as the child gets older, we train them to fast more and more hours. So chinuch means shoris. Chinuch doesn't mean the complete fast. The answer is there's two different stages, according to Rav Huna and Rav Chista. There's two stages of chinuch. There's a stage of fasting shoyz, and then there's a stage of fast, according to Rav Huna and Rav Nachman, there's a stage of fasting shoyz, and then there's a stage of fasting the entire thing. So Rav Abba Shmuel's Braisa is not addressing that second kind of training, only the first one. The Braisa is not addressing the first kind of shoyz that the Mishnah is addressing, not according to them. The Braisa is addressing the chinuch of the complete thing, which is a second stage. Which is a second stage of chinuch. One second. No, the Braisa, which mentions hours, is talking about the first stage. The Mishnah is implicitly mentioning both. It's saying lifnei shana v'lifnei shnasayim. So it's talking about, in other words, there's a stage of chinuch when they fast the complete one, and there's a stage of chinuch before that, which is hours. So the braisa is focusing only on the hours one, but there is in fact a second one as well, according to them. Whereas according to Rabbi Yechanan, not. Now all of this is according to Rashi. Now the Rif has a much different girsa. Which is that in particular he has, now unlike our Girsa, in particular, unlike our Girsa, where Rav Huna and Rav Nachman are not disagreeing, one gives the ages for a boy and the other gives the ages for a girl, the Rif learns that they are arguing. And he has the Girsa somewhat differently, that Rav Huna is moving things up 1 year before Rav Nachman. And then you have Rav Yechanan again, who disagrees with both of them and says there's no chinuch of Hashlama at all. There's only a chinuch, of hours. So now, according to that, the Rif says, when it comes to the question of whether there's chinuch at all for Hashlama, he says the halacha is like Rabbi Yechanan, that there is not. The maximum kind of chinuch that you have when the child is before bar bas mitzvah is a chinuch of shoyz. On the other hand, when do we begin that chinuch? In that, he paskins like Rabbi Nachman. Which is sort of the middle ground between Rav Huna and Rav Nachman and Rav Yechanan. Rav Nachman is kind of the middle ground because he says essentially Rav Huna and Rav Yechanan are later Chachamim than Rav Yechanan. Therefore, in that, we should say Halacha Kebasroi. And within them, he paskins like Rav Nachman because he's like the average among them. So it comes out according to that. So according to that, it would come out that when the child is 9 or 10, and according to the Rif, there's no difference in this between a boy and a girl, even though it is true that girls have their bas mitzvah a year earlier than boys have their bar mitzvah. Nevertheless, when it comes to chinuch of fasting, he learns we don't make that distinction. So therefore, it comes out that a girl has 1 year less of chinuch of fasting than a boy does. So when they're 9 or 10 respectively, then we start delaying their breakfast. And then that continues, and that continues. So now in Shulchan Aruch it brings both opinions. So according to the Rif, it would come out that from when they're 9 or 10 is when they start fasting shoyz. There's never a time until their bar bas mitzvah where they're actually required to fast the entire fast, not even drabanan. In Shulchan Aruch, it brings both opinions. It brings that from 9 and 10, you start delaying their meal. Then it brings that from a certain age, from 11 or 12, depending whether the child is healthy or sick, they should be fasting the entire one. But then, which is according to Rav Nachman. On the other hand, then it says, on the other hand, maybe the halacha is like the Rif, that they don't need to. And then Shulchan Aruch says, fine, if the child is really unwell, then you can rely on that and not make them fast the entire thing until they're actually bar bas mitzvah. Once they're bar bas mitzvah, then they have to fast the entire thing. And then fine, if they can't manage through the fast, then you have the usual rule, like you would do with an adult, where you feed them only a little bit at a time, if possible. So again, even though we don't move up these ages 1 year for a girl, even though her bas mitzvah is earlier, and why not? An interesting thing that gets into this is a bit of a side issue, which Tosfos Rishonim points out, and other Rishonim deal with as well. Does a man have a chiyuv to be mechanech his daughters? To be mechanech his sons, we know he has a mitzvah to teach them Torah, and based on that, to Rabbanan, he has a mitzvah to train them in various other mitzvahs as well, one of them being this one. But on the other hand, first of all, you have a concept, Tosfos Rishonim points out, you have a concept that the Gemara mentions elsewhere, that if a katan is doing something also, then Beis Din does not have to prevent him from doing it. So if the kid is eating on Yom Kippur, why should we have to stop him? And second of all, does this apply to a daughter as well? So as far as katan oichon nevelus, so Tosfos Rishonim brings from Rabbi Eliezer of Nitz, that first of all, that's only applying when there's only a lav involved. Here, there is an essay involved. There is, after all, an essay to honor as nafshei seichem. So you have to train them in that, just like you would train them in any other essay. And furthermore, also, anyway, the father himself has a specific mitzvah of chinuch beyond that. So therefore, he would have to. So fine. Beis Din or anybody else who sees this child eating an issur doesn't necessarily have to stop him, but the father does. Whether the mother does is a whole other question also, whether the mother is chayiv in the mitzvah of chinuch. The halacha is technically she's not, although practically speaking, of course, she often is the one. But as far as daughters versus sons, so Tosfos Rishonim learns that in fact there is usually a chiyuv for a man to be mechanech his daughters as well. There's one particular case when it comes to a nazir where it's a halacha l'moshe misinei that a father can declare his son a nazir but not his daughter. But that the Tosfos Rishonim says that doesn't necessarily apply to other areas of Torah.
Depends on what? How old the daughter is.
No, so that's what we're saying. In other words, chinuch, every mitzvah has its own age of chinuch, depending how what the child is capable of. So for example, once a girl is old enough to light a match, then that's her chinuch for Shabbos candles, and you start doing be mechanech them at 3 years old. Once a boy is able to keep himself clean, then it's the age of chinuch for tzitzis, and so forth with each of the other mitzvahs. So we're talking about when the kid is of the age of chinuch. Again, as we're saying in the Gemara over here, nobody holds that below 8 is the age of chinuch for fasting at all. It only starts at 8 or 9 or whatever. By the way, also in that connection, the Rif explained that part of the machlokes between Rabbi Yochanan and the other chachamim, between him and Rav Huna and Rav Nachman, is the question that year before Bar Bas Mitzvah, does that have the din for this purpose of like the year after or like the year before? It's called Toich HaPerek. During that 1 year when they're about to become bar bas mitzvah, are they already considered for certain purposes already as if they were or not? So he says that factors into Rabbi Yochanan's discussion with them also. Anyway, so a girl, once she reaches a certain age, so that's the question. Does a father have a mitzvah to be mechanech his daughter in whatever mitzvahs are appropriate for her age or not? So Tosfos Rishonim says yes. There are other Rishonim who learn that no, a man does not have a chiyuv to mechanech his daughter. So we're mechanech them in fasting on Yom Kippur. But according to that, it would come out it's not a real chiyuv like it is for a boy. In fact, Tosfos Yom Kippurim says that is why, according to Rashi's Girsa, when we had over here, the Girsa we have in front of us in the Gemara, when we have Rav Huna is talking about a girl, why does he use the expression ben ches or ben tes if he's talking about a girl? And the reason is, possibly according to the Rishonim, who say that there's no chiyuv of chinuch for a girl, it's only like once you're being mechanech a boy, then fine, you have a mitzvah, then you should be mechanech the girl as well. So therefore he phrases it in terms of a boy, even though he's actually talking about the age of a girl. One interesting nafkamina that comes out of all of this is we know when a boy becomes bar mitzvah, his father gets an aliyah over there and says, Baruch Shapterani, Ma'onah Shalazeh. because, in other words, he was responsible all this time to be mechanechim, and he's held responsible for any averus the kid does, whereas now the kid is responsible for himself. So why don't we say that when a girl becomes bas mitzvah? So in fact, one answer is based on this. Since it's not so clear whether the father has a chiyuv to be mechanech his daughter, because you have this machlokas rishonim, therefore he doesn't say that bracha when his daughter becomes bas mitzvah. So again, our Mishnah is talking about girls, but again, that might just be derech grara. Once you're being mechanech the boys, then okay, you're mechanech the girls as well, but not that there's an independent chiyuv to be mechanech them. Now, I mean, there is a popular notion that people have that the last three fasts before a kid becomes bar bas mitzvah, they should be fasting the whole thing. There doesn't really seem to be any source for that. Various people have looked into it and haven't really found any clear source for that concept. Based on what we're saying over here, it sounds like if we say the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan, then they don't have to fast at all, the whole fast, until they're bar bas mitzvah. And if the halacha is not like Rabbi Yochanan, then there is a point where they have to fast the whole fast, but that would be a year or two before, rather than only three fasts before. Everybody has heard the three fast thing. It seems there's no clear marker for it. One more thing to mention in this connection, all of this is primarily about Yom Kippur. When it comes up, in fact, Tosfos Yom Kippurim says, this is why the Mishnah mentions V'yom Kippurim. The whole Perek is talking about Yom Kippur. Why did the Mishnah have to use the expression Ein Ma'anan Oisin V'yom Kippurim? And he says, because it's being Meramez on all these dinim are less applicable to the other fasts. So the other fasts, being even Tisha B'Av, being that they're only Dirabbanan, then therefore there's more reason for a kula on them and to say that that children shouldn't have to fast them, shouldn't have to fast them until they're actually bar bas mitzvah, or at least that they should only be able to fast a partial fast or something. Okay. Mishnah says, Ubra Shehiricha Basar Kodesh, if a pregnant woman smelled meat of Kodesh, which she's not allowed to eat, or the other way around, she smells chazir flesh, and the same thing would be true if she smells food on Yom Kippur. So the problem is, what happens is, why does she have a crave? She has an unusual craving for it because of the baby in her womb. The baby itself is the one who has the taiva, and Rashi says, if you don't give her something to eat from it, both of them are going to be in danger. There's an interesting point about that, and Machlokes Rishonim about that. What if we know that she's not going to be in danger, only the baby? So she might lose the baby, but she herself would pull through. So many Rishonim learn, that Ramban learns, talks about this extensively, and he says, nevertheless, you still would be able to be over in order to save the baby. He brings other opinions that say that not, although the Rosh says, practically speaking, you don't really find that. If the baby's life is in danger, so is the mother's in general. So it's not necessarily negeya as a practical halacha l'maaseh, but in principle, you do have that discussion. Anyway. The Mishnah says, Ma'achilin oisa ad shetoshiv nafsha. We give her to eat until her soul is restored, until she feels better, because again, otherwise it's a danger to her life. And as we're going to say, pikuach nefesh is doicha kol ha-tora kol. Chola, how about a sick person? Ma'achilin oisa al pibukiyin. We give him to eat according to what experts advise. If two doctors or more say that he's dangerously ill, if he doesn't eat, then we give him to feed. Then we give him food to eat. We're going to discuss in the Gemara tomorrow on Daf Pei Gimel Bes Hashem about the various dinim of the opinions of doctors in that regard. How many doctors we need, and what if the doctors contradict themselves, and so forth. We're going to get into all of that. And if there are no expert doctors over there, then we feed him based on his own assessment of himself, until he says enough that I'm satisfied and I'm not in danger anymore. Because as the Gemara is going to say, the Gemara quotes a pasuk, "Lev yadeya maras nafshei." The soul knows its own bitterness. So the person himself has a certain feeling of when he feels that the danger to his life is over. So the Gemara says, "Tana rabbanan." If a pregnant woman smells meat of kodesh or meat or chazir flesh, and by the way, you know, we have it famously in the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, it says lo yipila isha mereach b'sar kodesh, that one of the nisim in the Beis Hamikdash is that no woman ever miscarried from the smell of the meat of kodeshim when they can't eat it. But in other words, the point is, if that nest doesn't exist, and we learned before that some of the Meforshim say that primarily those nisim only existed in the first Beis Hamikdash, not in the second, so it could happen. So first, what do? Teichman lakush beroitiv, that we don't right away give her from the actual meat itself. First, we dip in a kush, which is a long needle, a spindle that they use for spinning thread. So it's a big long piece of wood. So we stick that, we stick the end of that into the gravy, into the soup of the tavshil, and we let her, and we put that on her mouth so she can suck the liquid from it. If that calms her down, mutav, then good. Then this way she hasn't eaten the mamoshus of the iser so much. She's eaten only the tam of the iser. Okay, you have a machloikus in different places in Shas, whether tam ke'ikr or tam ain a ke'ikr, but even if tam ke'ikr, it's not as serious as the ikr itself.
Shows us a small amount, not even enough.
So it's not even enough, right? It's far below Maloy Lugmov and far below Kasevis Agasa, but it might be that little taste of it is enough to take the edge off. The Imla, Machilino, says Shumanatsma. If not, then they give her from the fat of it itself. Because the only three mitzvahs that you have to go on Mesiras Nefesh rather than the over on them are those three. Anything else is overridden because of Pekuach Nefesh. Later on Daf Pei Hei, we're going to talk about specifically a specific limud as far as Shabbos that Pekuach Nefesh overrides it. We're going to have later on Daf Pei Hei, we're going to have a number of limudim of that concept. Here we're talking more generically when it comes to other mitzvahs that it's doing for most other mitzvahs. Why you need a separate limud for Shabbos when you already have a general one for all of the mitzvahs, we'll talk about that when we get to that point, Bez Hashem, on Daf Pei Hei. There's a number of the Achronim talk about it. There's a Sicha from the Rebbe in Chelek Chav Zayin where he talks about it, etc. Anyway, so She'en L'chadavah, She'en L'chadavah, Nefesh Chutzma, Abed Ezorah, V'gil Adai, Se'shvich Ezdam. So the Gemara says Avodah Zarah Minolon. So let's figure out how do we know that Avodah Zarah is not that Pekuach Nefesh is not Doicha Avodah Zarah. So the Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Rabbi Eliezer, Im Nema B'chol Nafshecha, Lama Nema B'chol Moedecha, V'im Nema B'chol Moedecha, Lama B'chol Nafshecha. In Shema, why does it have to say that you have to love Hashem B'chol Nafshecha, B'chol Lebo B'chol, B'chol Nafshecha, B'chol Moedecha? Whichever one is more important to you, mention that one. And a Kavach Omer, that the lesser one you also have to. It means like this: Im yesh l'cha adam shgufay chaviv olav mamon. You may have a person whose body is more precious to him than his mamon. Therefore, l'chach nema b'chol nafshecha. Therefore, for him, the pasuk says you have to love Hashem regardless, even if it means at the cost of your body. Now, how does loving Hashem mean not avodah zarah? So Rashi elsewhere explains: since you love Hashem, you're not going to exchange him for anything else. So therefore, so a person as gufay is more chaviv than mamonah. So for him, it says b'chol nafshecha. V'im yesh l'cha adam shemamonah chaviv olam gufay. You may have a person whose mamonah is more precious to him than his guf. L'chach nema b'chol ma'idecha. Therefore, on such a person, it says b'chol ma'idecha. Where ma'idecha means your wealth, your riches. So even if you have to give all those up, you're still not allowed to worship avodah zarah. How do you have a person that mamonim chavav olam megupay? Okay, we say about tzaddikim mamonim chavav olam yais megupam, but it means only that, in other words, that they're willing to put themselves a little bit of risk, like Yaakov with the pachim ktanim to get them. Doesn't mean that, you know, we're not talking about the kind of guy who you tell him your money or your life, and he's gonna have to stand there and think which one. So the Tosfos Yom HaKippurim explains that actually within one person's own life, there might be sometimes when he feels more one than the other. And he gives the example. Let's say when a person is young. If a person, when he's young and he still has earnings potential, if he's told your money or your life, he's likely to say, fine, I'll give up all my money. I can at least, I'm still young and healthy and strong. I can work for a living and earn more money. On the other hand, the same person, when he's old, might well say, well, if I don't have any money, I'm going to starve to death. So what do I need my life for? Then I might as well. So therefore, even within the same person's life, you may have different stages. So the Torah is saying in both cases, he has to be moser nefesh not to do avodah zarah. So that shows us how we know that avodah zarah, therefore, that pekuach nefesh is not doicha avodah zarah. Next, gilei arayis shvichas damim minolon. How do we know the same din applies to gilei arayis and shvichas damim? So like this, the Tanya, we learn in the Braisa, Rebbe Omer, the Pasuk describes a case where a woman, a Naira HaMorasa, is out in the field and a man grabs a hold of her and rapes her. So the Pasuk starts by saying, you don't punish her at all because it was ba'onis. And then the Pasuk continues, ki kasha yokum isha re'ehu ritzochei nefesh. It is just like when a person stands up against somebody else and kills him. Kein hadavar azeh. So it is in this case over here. Now the question is, now what are we learning from that? We're not learning on the face of it, we're not learning from that she's potter from punishment, just like the victim of a murder or an attempted murder is potter from punishment. We know that already because the beginning of the pasuk says v'lanar leisas adavar. So what is that comparison with a ritzeach teaching us? So ha'ela ha'rezeh bolalamed v'nimtza lamed. This is one of those things where it sounds as though the Torah is trying to use this case to teach us about something else, and it turns out the other way around. We're actually learning from it looks like we're bringing the other thing to learn to hear, and really it's the other way around. It sounds like the Torah is saying you want to know why you don't punish her because it's like a ritzeach, but really it's the other way around. We learn a din from ritzeach to naira amarasa. What din? Ma naira mayrosa nitan latzila benafshay. Just like with a naira mayrosa, you can save her even at the cost of the roidif's life. So you chase after him. And the Gemara explains in Sanhedrin, you do have a chiyuv first to try to wound him and prevent that. But if you can't, if you're too far away to aim properly, or wounding him is not going to stop him, then you kill him. So just like by so ma naira mayrosa nitan latzila benafshay, and we know that nitan latzila benafshay because the pasuk says that she cried out ve'ein moshiach lo, and nobody was coming to save her, which implies that if there was somebody available to save her, then it's his responsibility to do that, even if that means killing the roider. So just like that, after itzeach, hold the same thing with itzeach, nitan latzila benafshay. So we're learning from the naira mayrosa to the itzeach, even though it sounds from the way the Torah phrases it that it's the other way around. We're learning something from the itzeach to the naira mayrosa. In fact, it goes both ways. From naira mayrosa, we're learning that by both them nitan latzila benafshay. And vice versa, maritzeach yahorik val yaver af naira mayrosa yahorik val yaver. Just like by ritzeach, as the Gemara is going to explain soon, how we know this that yahorik val yaver. So it is by naira mayrosa. So with the now Rashi stresses that we're talking only about the man. If the man is being told do this arayas or we're going to kill you, then yahorik val yaver, but not her. He brings based on a Gemara in Sanhedrin that says over there by Esther kauka olam havoi, that she was passive and therefore she's not responsible to be she's not responsible to be moisin nefesh. Tosfos gets into a very long discussion of it. This is one of those Tosfos I've seen called like an iceberg. You have a tiny little bit on the other side, and then you turn to Amud Beis and you have this gigantic thing. So Tosfos goes through and discusses in great detail three different opinions on the subject. First of all, Rashi's shitta, that no woman is ever chayev to be moisir nefesh for arayas, because she's passive in the act. Only the man ain't kidding. No, that's the goy is another matter. Wait, according to Rashi, it doesn't matter whether the guy who wants to rape her is a goy or a yid. Either way, the fact that she's not doing the action, he's the one who's doing the action, ain't kishri el ladas. Therefore, according to Rashi, she's not responsible to be moisir nefesh. Then Tosfos brings a second explanation, that it is specific to Esther because being a tzaddikus, she wouldn't have had Hana from Ahasuerus being with her. And then Tosfos goes through various examples like that, where the Gemara mentions that concept that, for example, by Yoel and Sisera, that she didn't have any Hana. So that's a second explanation. So in other words, according to that, a regular woman would have to be Moshe Nefesh, not to submit to Arias. Only when she's a tzaddikus, like Esther, would we say that not. Then Tosfos brings a third opinion of Rabbeinu Tam, which is what you were saying, that there's a difference whether the boil is a yid or a goy. So we're talking about she's an Eishes Ish. If the boil is a goy, then Rabbeinu Tam learns that no, the fact that the goy for this purpose is considered like an animal. So therefore, so in that case, then she's not obligated to be Moisin Nefesh. But if it were a yid, then yes, she would be obligated to. Bechlal, Tosfos learns, Rabbeinu Tam learns that beer with a goy does not have any effect on her as far as her dinim of paslus. For example, if her husband is a kohen, she should have to leave him. Although Tosfos asks on that because you have other gemaras that seem to imply that yes. But Tosfos also mentions, by the way, that Tosfos brings a case where there was a woman, there was a married Jewish woman who shmadzich. She went and married a goy. Later on, that goy himself later on became a ger. Now her first husband divorced her. The question was, can this goy marry her? Now we have a concept: k'shem shasur l'baal, kach asur l'boil. that just like when a woman was mezana, while she's an eishes, she's also to her husband. And in this case, it was berotzen. Not if it was ba'onus, would be different. But berotzen, she's also to her husband, and she's also to the boil. However, Rabbi Natan said that since he was a goy at the time, then he's considered like a behema, and therefore she is allowed to marry him. The halacha, the accepted halacha, is not like that. As far as I know, the accepted halacha is that the bia of a goy is does aser her to her husband, and whether kashem shasur labao kachasur laboyo would apply, that I'm not sure about. But at any rate, we do say that if a woman is mazana, then it doesn't. The halacha is not like Rabbi Natan, that she is in fact also to her husband. If he's a koyin, it doesn't matter whether it was ba'onus or beratzen. If he's a yisrael, then only if it's beratzen. Okay, so in any case, yeah. So that's there is also, by the way, a further machlokes rishonim on the question when a person is not required to be moser nefesh, are they allowed to? Now the Rambam in Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah famously writes that no, only the three that we're talking about over here is a person required to be moser nefesh, as well as also shas hashmad. If there's a time when the goyim are trying to outlaw Yiddishkeit altogether, then you're moser nefesh, even as the Gemara says, arkasid de misana, even to not change your shoelaces to the goyish style. That the Gemara mentions that in Sanhedrin. But other than that, the Rambam learns if it's not a shas hashmad and it's anything other than the big three, the Rambam learns a person is not allowed to be moser nefesh, and if he is, then he's mischayev benafshei. Because he's Moisef. On the other hand, Tosfos in some other places learns that no, a person is in fact allowed to be Moisef Nefesh for these things if he wants to. Mephoshim say that even the Rambam might agree that we have certain cases where there were great Chachamim who were Moisef Nefesh for things that are not among the big three. They would understand. Tosfos mentions that for one thing, if you have, it's an Adam Gadol, and he sees that people are being very careless with a certain mitzvah, then he's allowed to be Moisef Nefesh. We talk about that in Psochim. Then he's allowed to be Moisef Nefesh on it. So the Rambam might agree with that concept. But, so that's an example of Daniel being thrown into the lion's den because he was davening. So one answer you could say is Daniel Bechlal didn't realize that there's anything wrong. He figured, for example, the Malbim on the Pesukim explains over there that Daniel thought that his tefillahs are Bechlal not included in the Gzera, and he explains on various grounds why that is. But so that's one way. But the other way to understand it is that people were being very careless with the mitzvah of tefillah at that time, and therefore we had to make a public example of it. But anyway, according to Tosfos, to begin with, anybody is able to be Moser Nefesh for any mitzvah if they want, even though they're not required to Abi Halacha, and they're still considered, a Kaddish. You had many examples of that during the Middle Ages, when there were Jews who went on Mesiras Nefesh for other mitzvahs, and they were following Tosfos in that. Okay.
If she has a Na, is that considered Onus?
Well, I mean, even if as long as it's started by Onus, then yes. The Gemara tells us in Ksubas that yes, if it's started by Onus, then even though later on she has Hana and now she's feeling Ratzon, nevertheless, it's still considered Onus because once a person starts, then their nature is that they have to continue with it. They have to continue it anyway. So yeah, so the answer is as long as the beginning of it was by Onus, then it's considered by Onus, yes. But anyway, according to Tosfos over here, according to the second explanation in Tosfos over here, if to begin with she's a tzaddikus and she's not going to have any hana from in the first place, only then is she's not required to be moser nefesh. But if she's an average woman, where to begin with she's going to start having hana, then she would have to be moser nefesh. Okay. The Gemara says, "V'retzeach gufei minolon." How about a retzeach himself? We're saying that we're learning
only by Esther.
No, that's the Gemara mentions Esther kaka olam avoy. So that's the question. Does it mean only Esther, according to Tosfos' second explanation? Yes, it's only Esther because she's a tzaddikus. According to Tosfos' third explanation, a bit of time, it's not only Esther, but it's only a case where the boil is a goy. In this case, it was Achashverosh. According to Rashi, rather, it doesn't mean just Esther; it means any Jewish woman, because any Jewish woman is kaka olam. Okay, so the question is Ritzeach Gufei Minolon. Now you're saying that a Ritzeach, we're saying that you're learning Naira Merosa from Ritzeach, just like Ritzeach, Yehorek Val Yaver, so also Naira Merosa. So the question is Ritzeach Gufei Minolon. Nu, where do we know that concept by the Ritzeach himself? And the answer is Svari. The answer is it's a Svara. We don't have an explicit pasuk for it, but we have a Svara. As we have the example, we learned about it in Pesachim. Dahuda Osala Kameda Rava. There was a person who came to Rava or Rabba with a Shaila. Amalei, he says, Amalei Mori Duroi, the ruler of my village, so the mayor or whatever of my village, says to me, Katle Laplanya, kill Ploini, who's a Yid, the Eloi Katil Nalach, and if not, then I'm going to kill you. What should I do? Amalei. So Rava tells. So Rava tells him, Niktalach v'lay tikto. Let him kill you rather than that you should kill this other guy. Because what makes you think that you should do the Aveira? My chosis, domini doch sumak tvei. You're thinking that your blood is redder. In other words, that your soul is more important. Dilma doma, darhu gabra, sumak tvei. Maybe that other guy is actually more important in the Avish's eyes. In other words, Rava is saying to him, Rashi teaches out, you're thinking to be matriot because b'chai b'hem, as we're going to learn later on, and daf pehei. But you're thinking, what does that mean? B'chai b'hem means a Jewish life is precious to the Eivishter, and therefore we don't want to lose it unnecessarily. But the fact is, he or somebody is going to end up dying anyhow. So that being the case, either way, a Yid is going to be killed. So why should it be? They have to be over on the mitzvah, and another Yid is going to be killed. At least if you're not over on the mitzvah, yes, somebody is going to be killed. But there's no reason to think that you're more important than the other guy. With that said, by the way, the Kesef Mishnah explains that even when that svara doesn't apply, nevertheless, the din is still a din. Let's say, for example, so the goy says, fine, then I'm going to kill that other guy. So you're going to say, well, he's going to be dead anyway, so maybe in that case, but nevertheless, the two people who are one person, nevertheless, Xeris Akosov, that you don't do that. Now, going back to the case of a pregnant woman, where we said that she smells the food and she has a craving for it and her life's going to be in danger. So the Gemara gives an example. Hahi ubra de orcha. There was a pregnant woman one time who smelled food and started developing a craving for it, and it was what?
Oh, recha.
Recha means the smell, and it was on Yom Kippur. Also, the Kamei de Rebbe, they came to Rebbe to ask him what to do. Amalahu, he tells them, Zilu l'chushula d'yema d'kipurihu. Go whisper in her ear that it's Yom Kippur. And let's see if the baby is going to hear that, and that may calm him down. L'chushula, so they whispered to her, v'ilchisha, and it worked. She accepted that, and the baby stopped having that taiva. Kori alei, so Rebbe applied to that, the positive, like it says by Yumio, b'terem etzorcha b'abet nidatich v'gomer, even before I formed you in the womb, Hashem says already, I knew you, and I knew, in other words, that you have the capability of becoming a tzaddik. Now, of course, tzaddik v'rosha le'ka'ama, we're not saying that he's automatically going to be a tzaddik, but he has the ability to do that. In particular, one idea is, we know that kedoshim tiyu means, hey, you prushim min ha'arayis min ha'aveira. Being a kodesh is that the person has the capability of holding themselves back from something. And here we see that this baby had the capability of holding himself back. Therefore, it means he has the potential to be a kodesh. And sure enough, nafak min Rabbi Yechanan, the baby turned out to be Rabbi Yechanan, who was a tremendous kodesh. On the other hand, hahi ubra de orcha, there was another case of a woman who smelled food on Yom Kippur and was in danger. Also, the kamei de Rav Chanina, they came to Rav Chanina to ask him what to do. Omalahu l'chushula, so he tells them again, whisper in her ear, v'lo yochisha, and it didn't work. She still had the craving, and they had to give her some of the gravy or some of the food. Kori alei, so Rav Chanina referred to that apostle and told him, zoru reshoim meirochem, the reshoim became zorim, and became strangers already while they're in the womb. Again, doesn't mean that he's destined to be a Rasha. He still has Bechir HaChavshas, but he has a much more powerful tendency towards that. In fact, the end of that, the next pasuk continues, Asher lo yishma l'kor malachshim, that he doesn't listen to the sound of whisperers, referring to over here, that they whispered and he didn't listen. Nofak mino shabsai otzer peiru. In the end, that baby turned out to be shabsoi, the hoarder of Paris. The Gemara explains in Baba Basra, that, yeah, you learn, yeah, that that you we learned in Enyakov, not so. No, we didn't get to it in Enyakov, actually. We're gonna get to it. Okay, yeah. The Gemara says over there that especially during years of famine, you're not allowed to hoard produce because that raises the prices and that makes it much harder for the Aniyim. So this Shabsai, though, made a specialty of doing that and causing a hardship for the Aniyim, and therefore he was the result of he was the result of this, that he wouldn't even listen when his on Yom Kippur and forced his mother to eat treif to eat something that's also on Yom Kippur or whatever. There's a place where the Rebbe talks about an interesting thing in that connection. Another place where it says about somebody that while he was in the womb, his mother was forced to eat treifus is Elisha ben Avuya, Elisha Acher. Where it says in the Yerushalmi, the Bavli and the Yerushalmi talk about a number of things, what brought it about that he had such a tremendous descent from being one of the four great Chachamim, Abar Nichnas L'Paradis, all the way down to he became an Apikodis. So one thing the Yerushalmi mentions is that one time when his mother was pregnant with him, she passed by a base of a Dezara and they were cooking a stew over there and she had a tremendous taiva and they ended up having to give her some of it because otherwise she and the baby would be in danger. So we know that trade for food has a poil and a little bit on a person, and therefore that made him more susceptible to that. So the Rebbe once pointed out in a footnote to a letter that now we find a Gemara in Chagiga that when Acher was in Gehenim for a long period of time, Rabbi Yochanan says, I'm going to work to get him out of there. And he did. No, Rabbi Yochanan actually was not. That's the Rabbi Meir. First, the Gemara says, Acher didn't even want to put him in Gehenim or in Gan Eden. He doesn't deserve Gan Eden because of everything he did. He doesn't deserve Gehenim because, after all, he was a Talmid Chacham. So until Rabbi Meir says, I'm going to arrange to get him into Gehenim, and smoke will come rising out of his grave. And then many years later, Rabbi Yochanan says, I'm going to arrange to get him out of Gehenim. He's had enough time in there already. So the Rebbe shtells zech why Rabbi Yochanan, of all people, is concerned about Acher. And he explains, based on our Gemara over here, we're saying that Rabbi Yochanan, even when he's in the womb, had the capability of controlling his taiva and not forcing his mother to eat something today. Whereas Elisha Acher is the other way around. He unfortunately forced his mother to do that. What could happen in front of the Beis Din Shamayla is when they're looking over how did Acher become what he became, they could point out this and they could tell him, you know what, it's your fault. Why even in the womb could you not control yourself? And you want to say it's impossible, look at Rabbi Yochanan. He was able to do it. So fakir, Rabbi Yochanan did not want to be used as a kateger, as an argument to punish Acher further. He wanted to, therefore, dafke, he wanted to be the sanager for him and say, I'm going to defend him in front of the Beis Din Shamayla. And Kachaba, the Gemara says, when Rabbi Yochanan passed away, the smoke stopped coming from Acher's grave. No, the Gemara about the smoke in the grave is in Chagiga. The part about Rabbi Yochanan saying that I'm going to get involved is also over there in Chagiga. This, that where the Rebbe ties that together, we're tying it together with our Gemara, is in a footnote that there's a letter that Rebbe wrote. I've mentioned this letter before. There was a guy, David Stockhammer. He was the father-in-law of Mordechai Mentlich and then Moshe Pinchas Katz and Avraham Ziskin. Anyway, so in the early Tuf Shins, one that was published in Akriya Vakrusha of Maimer from the Friedrich Rebbe, where he talks about Kol Yisrael Eshan Chalkalam Abba without exception. And this Stockhammer wrote to the Rebbe, what do you mean without exception? Elu Shein Lam Chalik Lam Abba. And the Mishnah gives a whole list. So the Rebbe goes through over there and shows how even those that we say ein lehem chelik l'olam haba, they may end up having a chelik l'olam haba. Their children can give them schosim, sometimes even their parents can give them schosim, sometimes even like this case with Rabbi Yochanan and Acher, somebody who's not related to them at all can give them schosim, and besides that, they can come back in a yogul, etc., etc. And you really see in that letter over there, the Rebbe is not going to allow any yid to stay over there, to stay out of there. So in a footnote over there, the Rebbe talks about why Taker Rabbi Yochanan got involved over here.
And you find the Gemara, we also learn how each one said you'd know how the Benazara was and all that.
That's right. In Sanhedrin, you have the story with Menashe and Ravashi, right. Each one had, right. But that's different because in Menashe's times, there was a tremendous Yetzirah for Abedazara, which didn't exist in later times. The Yetzirah that a baby should want food in the womb, that existed the same in Acher's times as in Rabbi Yochanan's times. Okay. Everyone.